everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Hollywood Knockbusters.
Exciting.
I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got a special guest here. He hasn't been on this show yet because this show just started last year or so. So please welcome Paul Prezenza.
Hey, otherwise known as the Moo Cow. How's it going, everybody?
Paul is my co-host for Indie Film Cafe. And he, among a lot of other shit that we do, I figured the one that I was going to get him for would have to be, Mallrats. You know, we've talked about other things, but this is the one that I think that, definitely out of all, like, the movies that we love, should have done very well and did do very well on DVD and Blu-ray and a lot of people talk about it, and we'll get into that, but it bombed.
It was considered a flop at the time, which is unfortunate. And did you know, Mr. Moody, that Mallrats happens to be my favorite Kevin Smith film?
I didn't know that, but I think you may have said something to that effect before.
Even though I fully admit Clerks is a better film and Clerks is a more popular film and it's just a better film overall, I have a soft place in my heart for Mallrats. I always have, ever since I saw it in the theater. Loved it. And there are a number of reasons why, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So it was, for the longest time, it was my favorite Kevin Smith film. Because did you know that was my first Kevin Smith film?
No, I did not know that.
So it was my first Kevin Smith film and my first... So I'll get into that real quick. And then, because we'll talk about how we discovered it. So I was how old was I? I had to have been like in eighth grade or something. But I was over at a friend's house and him and his mom were getting into like some argument. And I felt really uncomfortable. You know, like they were yelling at each other. And
oh,
so
yeah,
so I felt really uncomfortable. So I saw my friend's brother watching a movie, and he's like a year or two younger than me. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? And he was like, watching Mallrats. And I said, well, what is that? And he was like, it's a comedy. And I was like, do you mind if I watch it with you? And I was like, sure, go ahead. So I sat down next to him and we watched this movie, and I was, like, blown away by, like, this is such a funny and silly and goofy movie. Like, why haven't I discovered this before? And so at the end of the movie, it says, you know, something about Jay and Silent Bob will be back and Chasing Amy or something. And then before then, it was, like, telling me that there was, you know, that there was another movie called Clerks, you know. And so I had to run over to the video store that weekend or so and rent that movie. So I watched them about the same time and fell in love with Kevin Smith's dialogue and Kevin Smith's silliness and then just Kevin Smith in general, you know.
And, you know, it's funny because we have talked about movies that we have seen when we're kids and then later on seeing them and then they're like, this is not a very good film.
Chasing Amy being one of them, actually. Yeah. Well, I mean, not when we were kids, but like, you know, Chasing Amy didn't really hold up as well. And we talked about
sometimes that. They don't. And yet, it's funny because, you know, we're also going to be doing Film Freaks today. And we're going to be doing a movie that I watched as a kid and loved. And I finally got it on Blu-ray. And it is held up. So every now and again, you will get these movies that hold up over time. But then there are others, they just, you know, it's just not as good. And it's funny about Mallrats because I think Mallrats has gotten something of a rebound. I think it has a lot more respect today than it does when it first came out. And I just think that people finally have come around and said, you know, this is actually a lot of fun, this film.
Well, I mean, and a lot of that also has to do with Kevin Smith, too, himself would typically, if somebody asked him if the, you know, like, basically, is this, you know, or they would say, like, Mallrats sucks. He'd be like, yeah, Mallrats sucks. You know, right? He would agree. Because he just was those kind of people, but he even says like he loves Mallrats. I mean, I think, and he's also talked about how Mallrats is like the gateway movie, you know, kind of like marijuana is the gateway drug, you know, or whatever. Right. This is the gateway movie to his movies. Like most people find out about Kevin Smith through Mallrats or sometimes Clerks, but really it was Mallrats.
It's funny because, you know, it's definitely a situation where more of a corporate hand was in the till in this particular case, because Clerks was such a very, very indie film and it made such a big hit that even at the time, I forget who it was. It wasn't Orion. I forget who it was, but United Artists.
Gramercy.
It was Gramercy. You know, even they were a little bit nervous about what they were going to do with Kevin Smith and a larger budget. So they actually wisely were able to come in and help him edit the film, because as it originally was, that would have been a terrible film.
And, you know, see, he's even said, like, that is just an extended cut or whatever. Like, that was, like, I think the first cut or whatever of the movie.
First cut. Yeah.
And so they call it the extended cut. I don't really find it extended, you know, at all.
It's longer.
Oh, it is probably longer, yeah. Because it took them about, like, freaking 20 minutes to get to, or 30 minutes to get to that.
Yeah, there are extra scenes, especially up on the roof, that are just, ugh.
I mean, they're just, it's just weird. It's just like, it feels like it's not the same movie.
Oh, it's not. It really changes the dynamic of the film poorly, I must add. So having the wisdom to allow, in this case, because usually when you know, the big boys get involved, they usually water down a film. In this case, I think it really improved it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, looking back at it, is Clerks had that ending where, you know, Dante gets shot, and they just cut that, right? They just cut that one part out, and it makes the movie so much better. You know, well, they cut those scenes out with, you know, of them on the rooftop and then of dealing with the stuff. There are things that they had to leave in to the movie, because there's one part where Michael Rooker looks and says, "If it isn't my neighbor," right, and he's talking about Brody Bruce, because that was actually in the movie, or the first cut is Dante, or not Dante, Jesus, Brody and T.S. are you know, talking, and Brody is saying he's his neighbor or whatever, which they weren't actually neighbors, and that was the joke, you know. But no, but now all of a sudden you just think, because it got cut, you know, you don't think anything of it. You think, like, that is actually just his neighbor, and it really, they don't live in the same, I guess, on the same street, and they're not neighbors. So it's just interesting things like that. did you know that that basically Jay wasn't allowed to audition for Jay?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, originally they did not want Jay to play Jay, and they had him go compete against Seth Green and Breckin Meyer, and those are the two people that they wanted. And Seth Green was in the running. It would have been Seth Green. And even those guys were fans of Clerks and were like, I don't want to do this, but like, I have to, you know, because money,
and,
you know.
And it's interesting because, in my opinion, one of the reasons why I really, really loved Mallrats and why I think it's a really good film is the fact that the movie expands the roles of Jay and Silent Bob. They weren't just a couple of smokehounds on the corner of the Quick Mart, you know, or whatever.
Quick Stop
giving out, you know, drugs. They were a lot more involved and in a lot more comedic way, and they helped really make the movie as fun as it is, in my opinion. Especially Jay. Jay was great. This is probably Jay's best performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, probably. One of Jay's best performances. I mean, I still love him in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, just because, you know, it's fun to see them get focused and everything. But I I absolutely loved him in this. Like, I thought that he had a lot of fun, and I mean, he is one of those guys that if you tell him he has to audition, he'll do it. And he'll give, like, 110%. Nowadays, he doesn't, like, if he does, like, an indie film or something, he doesn't have to audition. People just cast him, you know, based on who he is or whatever and what they know he can do. But most of the time, like, when he does these films, it's like, you know, it's like he's Jay. Like, Jay is Jay. Like, Kevin Smith wrote it for him. It's funny that they would have left him as Silent Bob, though. I guess they wouldn't screw with the director, you know, or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
say,
that's his role.
That's his role. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, like, who do you think they would have cast for Silent Bob anyway? You know, there's nobody would want that role.
But, you know, in the evolution of Jay and Silent Bob from Clerks, you know, through Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where they, every movie, it seems them expanding a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Mallrats is critical. Mallrats is a critical step because it really, really shows how these characters are more multidimensional than just, you know, the drug smart-ass drug dealers, and that's it.
Yep. Yep, I agree. And they didn't even, in this movie, they weren't drug dealers. You
right,
know,
right.
They didn't talk about that. And I don't know if that was...
He does put the one guy out at the contest after...
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, no, but like that meant he did drugs. He didn't... I don't think he sold them the drugs or anything.
No. He just gave it to him.
Yeah, gave him the drugs. He's like, what is it? What was it? I'm trying to remember. Like what did he give him? He gave him like a...
Snoochie Booches.
Yeah. Well, no, he gave him some kind of... marijuana or something, you know, some kind of weed, and he was like, all it took was a fat chronic blunt.
All it took was a fat chronic blunt.
Yeah, he was like, this guy was a lightweight. So many great lines in this movie, so many great quotes. Like, it's probably one of the most quotable
absolutely Kevin, the writing was really, really spot on in this film,
and yeah,
the dialogue was really, really good. And I have to say, even though I didn't like his character initially, the guy who plays T.S. does a really good job. It's kind of like the straight guy, you know, sort of, he's like the one regular guy amongst all these other crazy people floating around.
It's true.
But he's also very, very necessary in the role as well. And he's really good. And he plays off Brody really well.
Oh, you say T.S.?
Yeah.
T.S., yeah. T.S. is fucking amazing. Jeremy London. When they were casting this film... I was watching some documentaries and some different things, and Kevin Smith talked a lot about the casting of the film. That was like a crucial thing. So originally, Gramercy Pictures picked up this film, you know, from or whatever was going to make it, because he had to actually pitch it to Universal, you know, and everything. So they're like, oh, this seems like a great Gramercy, you know, film. And so Gramercy, who... he says couldn't market themselves out of a paper bag, you know, which, I mean, we'll get into that later.
There wasn't much at the time, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, so he ended up because you probably know, because you probably watch TV and, like, you were like, Mallrats.
Well, I saw Clerks in the Theater because the buzz was all about it, and we had a movie, a place called the State Theater back in Newark at the time, and it specialized in, you know, quote-unquote indie films and that kind of thing. So after that, it became a thing. So that once anything had to do with Kevin Smith came around, it got trumpeted on our local press and at the University of Delaware. But if it weren't for that, I'm not even sure I would have seen Mallrats, because it just did not have a big national campaign that I remember.
Definitely. So Kevin Smith ended up, you know, pitching it to them. They ended up going to... they end up going to Minnesota. Well, before then, they started looking around for different places.
They had
and everything.
To get a mall.
They had to get a mall. They actually, they were filming right next to the Mall of America. I think that's where they filmed it, the Mall of America. And they had, like, the run of the mall, you know, lucky them.
Buy me toys.
Yeah. but they actually shot, like, the close-ups of Eden Prairie Mall, which is a completely different mall, I think. And, but it's actually based on the Monmouth Mall, which is a mall in New Jersey that that Kevin Smith used to go to all the time. That's what he used to do, is just hang out with his friends at the mall, you know, or whatever. So
exactly, and that's probably why I have a soft spot in my heart for this, because I was an original mall rat. I remember when Christiana Mall came to Delaware. We didn't have a mall before. And yeah, all I did was hang around and play video games and just pump quarters into the game room and hang around the stores and cause trouble and eat snacks, and it was great. That was high school for me, and pre-high school.
Yeah, and I mean, this is about 20-something-year-olds or whatever, but it's funny. Have you ever noticed, like, Kevin Smith, each movie he does is a resemblance of him at that time, you know, a little older or whatever. So, you know, each one is a little bit of a different thing. And this was definitely him, like, an idea of what he was like in his 20s, you know, or whatever and stuff. So Clerks was like, this is the people who are 20-somethings and aimless, but don't really know what they want to do. They're kind of stuck, you know. Mm-hmm. They want to do more and everything. And then Marats is just the people who just don't give a fuck at that age, you know.
It's interesting because if you were to compare T.S. and Brody with
Dante and Randall,
it's a very interesting, it's a very similar dynamic, and it's very interesting to see how that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're... Did you know that Randall and Brody? The characters are related.
No, I did not know that.
Okay, the way you can tell is in Clerks, he says, "My cousin Walter, right? Tried to suck his own, died sucking his own dick,
right?
That's the same cousin Walter." Who got a cat stuck up his ass and got his, right? And so, now that I'm thinking about it, is it Cousin Walter, is that supposed to be Walt Flanagan? Like, Walt? I don't know.
But, I don't know, but Kevin Smith, there's your next movie. Crazy Walter needs his own movie.
We've talked about that all the time because... me and Brian O'Halloran, who played Dante, there's another character that has a sibling or cousin, and cousin they think it is, and I talked to Brian O'Halloran about this because there's Dante Hicks and there's Gil Hicks in Mallrats, and then in Chasing Amy it's Grant Hicks, and then in I think Grant Hicks, something like that, and then there's other Hicks, you know, and so he was like, I think the whole group is like, or the whole like joke is like they're a group of Hicks, you know, right? Nice. And it's sort of funny, but I think literally it didn't start out that way. It was like they wanted Brian O'Halloran in the movie. Marilyn Gigliotti who played Veronica, did audition for a role. I forgot what role, but she did audition, and sadly she didn't make the cut. But they did let her audition for Mallrats and, you know, whatnot.
Well, I'm glad he was able to get Jason Mewes because you can see the pressure. I mean, when you're doing Clerks, you can hire your friends and people you like, et cetera, et cetera. Now Gramercy is back in your film. They're going to want the Shannon Dohertys. They're going to want, you know, names. They're going to want more established stars.
Speaking of Shannon Doherty... So the guy who produced a Jim Jacks promised Joey Lauren Adams Renee the main role, right? And that was like from the very beginning. So Kevin Smith didn't know that. And so Kevin Smith was going to audition her, like, period, like everybody else. And then he found that out, but she wasn't going to get Renee because Shannon Doherty said, I was like, I'd be interested in being in this. I'm not on 90210 anymore. I'd like to do a comedy now, you know, and everything. And they were like, once they went to Universal, that was an automatic green light, for her. They were like, let's do Shannon Doherty, you know, and whatnot, and cast her in the film. I guess if you get somebody like Shannon Doherty in your movie at that time, because at that time she was a star.
Oh yeah, you know? And for very good reason. I've always liked Shannon Doherty. I always thought that she was really, really, really good. I thought she brought excellent comedic timing. She also brings a very, very sharp wit. She brings a lot to the table, and I just think it sort of captures her at a perfect time in her career. You know.
By the way. You didn't. You don't probably know this because I don't think I told you this yet. I actually worked with her on a movie, on a Lifetime movie.
You mentioned that before. You never got into details.
And then I walked right past her, and I didn't even know it. I did not know it was her at all until I just watched the movie, or at least watched my scenes of the movie. It's called, well, it was originally called Breast Cancer Bucket List, and they changed it to List of a Lifetime, which... You know, of course they're going to, because they're too scared of breast cancer bucket list sounds too edgy or something, too, like, you know, whatever. And too much probably like a comedy, you know, in a way, even though it definitely was not funny.
You don't want to make light of that. especially given Shannon Doherty's had health issues.
Right. And, I think, hasn't she had breast cancer or something? And she had some kind of cancer.
Between that and, you know, there were, you know, it was talk about her being difficult to work with and being problematic on set and all this other kind of stuff.
If she were, I you know what, I honestly didn't even know it was her.
It would not matter to this day if I were given the opportunity to interview or just hang out and talk with Shannon Doherty. I would do it in a second. I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan. I think she's pretty awesome, and I'd love to see her in more stuff.
Yeah. And she was so sweet as Renee. Like, you know, you kind of understood how she was. Like, I mean, Brody himself is such a, like, he does, you know, the whole idea was he was, once again, stuck, sort of. Like, he was happy and content where he was, you know. Mm-hmm. He's happy living with his parents. He was happy playing video games all day, you know.
And that's it.
Reading comics, playing video games. That's it. There's the only things, going to the mall, you know. It got to a point where he had to tell his ex that, you know, they had to come up with visitation rights for the mall. Because, you know, because he loved the mall so much and he was afraid, you know, having both of them together, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, that mall was pretty damn big. I mean, it was Mall of America, but that mall was pretty damn big.
And she has a lot of dialogue and a lot of unusual Kevin Smithy kind of dialogue. And she does a very, very good job with it.
It was funny. She was not happy with the one wardrobe thing, because she got to keep all the wardrobe that was in her contract.
Oh, that's cool.
But she didn't want the Degrassi jacket, mm-hmm. you know, Degrassi Junior High jacket, because I don't think she ever even heard of that show. So she was like,
I never heard of the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had,
not that you talked about it.
I hadn't heard of it until Kevin Smith was on it, you know, and stuff. Even with that Mallrats jacket, never heard of it. And that, like, I could never even see the logo saying Degrassi, especially with when I used to have the movie. It used to be on like Betamax and stuff.
Yeah, it was like a MTV thing, wasn't it?
No, it was Canadian. So it later went on to Nickelodeon, when it became like the Next Generation. And Kevin helped me get into that. I had never discovered it until I saw clips from Kevin and Jay on, it was like, Kevin and Jay go to Degrassi, and I was like, what is this? And it seemed interesting, like some kids dealing with other shit that's going on, plus Kevin Smith, you know, or whatever, right. And stuff. So I was like, all right, let me check this out, and I watched all the other old episodes of it, and I kind of fell in love with it. One of the ways I saw Kate Todd was she was on, you know, Degrassi and stuff, so.
And it's also a generational thing, since I'm, you know, a good 10 years older than you, and you know, by the time that show came out, I had zero interest in anything having to do with high school or high school kids.
That's funny that you say that, because I guess Degrassi Junior High itself was around the time that you would have been in high school. So, or junior high or high school or whatever it was, because Kevin Smith found Degrassi Junior High when he was in his whatever. And you might be about the same age as Kevin, right? If I'm correct.
Maybe.
So, you know, close to it. So, you know, it's, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if you had, but I don't think I don't know if it was on MTV. I don't think it was, but it was on something, obviously. No, I think he discovered it in, he must have discovered it when he went up to Canada to do his school.
I was never a big MTV person. The only time I ever watched it was 120 Minutes. Other than that, I stayed away from MTV and pretty much high school stuff in general. It wasn't until Buffy,
right,
the one show out of all shows that, you know, is set in high school with high school kids, something I have zero interest in. And then, but when I saw it advertised, I'm like, oh, well, that's different. And then first show hooked me, and I was like, this is awesome.
To bring it back, Seth Green was also on that show.
Yep.
You know, I'm just trying to like wrap my head around Jay being Seth Green. Like, I love him to death, and we've seen him. We have seen him play roles that we were like, holy crap, that is not Seth Green.
I'm not saying Seth Green couldn't play a role similar or something to that effect, but not Jay.
And Breck and Meyer did play a character similar to Jay in Clueless. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if, because I think Clueless came out about the same time as Mallrats, you know, or whatever. And that's why he was sort of one of those people.
There are just certain people who are now, at least in my mind, totally ingrained in that character.
Right.
You know, Sailboat Guy. He will always be Sailboat Guy for me for the rest of my
Willem.
Life. Willem.
And the funny thing about Ethan Suplee playing him is he was originally going up for one of the big roles, the normal roles, and he said, I would really like to read for Willem, you know? And Willem was Scott Mosier. Scott Mosier was originally going to be playing that character because he played that character in Clerks. Mm-hmm. It's the character that, like, talked about the snowball that he gets that he snowballed by whatever by Veronica. So there's the there was that scene, you know, that thing, and then so it was really weird because there's I believe if I'm trying to think of the time period, it's got to be like Mallrats was done the day before the day before Clerks, because Clerks had the wake for the girl, mm-hmm. Right? And she was going to, and it was the same girl who
died swimming,
yeah. And she was supposed to be on that game show.
Right.
So the game show went first, the wake came the day after, I believe. So how does Willem, who's this big, big goofy guy, become Willem that's this big, this skinny guy, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever, and older, you know, or whatever. And they came up with, like, the Willem of Two Worlds theory, you know, and everything. Because they had to, like, explain it, but, like, really, there could be two Willem Blacks.
Well,
I guess.
The thing is, Willem is such a very rare name. There's Willem yeah. Dafoe, and there's Willem and Mallrats, and that's about it. That's the only two I know in existence.
Are you saying that people should name their children Willem so we get more Willems in this world?
It couldn't hurt, but you know. how awesome would it be if Willem Dafoe had played Willem?
That would have been an interesting Willem.
Oh, that would have been a very interesting Willem.
Especially if he's, like, staring at the sailboat the whole time. Like, he could do it.
He could sell that, definitely.
But it just would have been a little it would have been a little different. You know, I really loved him. The only thing that I agreed with in the commentary was his shirt had all the, like, the mustard stain, but it looked like paint. Mm. And so it looked terrible, like it looked fake, you know, and everything. And so there was a couple things like that they mentioned in the commentary that I was like, yeah, I kind of agree. Like, a funny thing, I didn't notice this at all, but if you rewatch it, you'll probably notice this next time. In the scene where she gives, Renee gives Brody the letter, and she's, like, leaving through the window, she gets pulled mm-hmm. out the window because she can't just, like, leave the window. So if you watch her, her legs go... I never noticed that before until Jay Muse said, wasn't there somebody, like, pulling her on the other end?
And there was another scene, I don't know if you remember, where Shannon Doherty goes by Willem, and he's kind of acts like he knows her. And
right.
She's like, you know, gives him a shove. And I was like, whoa, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, I know what it's about. She said Brenda, which was her name on 90210.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And she just got fired from 90210 or whatever.
So you're saying that was an ad-lib line?
Yes.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And she didn't know. And she didn't know.
That's awesome.
That's why her actual thing was, like, a real, like, situation.
That's awesome.
She was pissed when she, I believe, like, when she, he said, Brenda, she goes, Dick, and, like, walks off.
I think that was funny.
They left it in there, and it's the best scene, of, like, one of the best
so
scenes.
Funny. I love that scene.
Yeah. So it's so funny. Yeah, that was.
There you go. If we ever get a chance to talk with Shannon Doherty,
I don't know if I'd want to ask her about that. I don't know.
It's been years and years and years. She's fine. She's over it.
Probably.
But I would love to hear her, what was going through her head when he said that.
Yeah, because she was probably very angry at him at that particular moment.
Because she has a temper. She's a little firecracker.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, and for sometimes it's for good reason, too. Like, when I get, you know, when people are just so mad at somebody for being so... like, Brody was so scared of her. Like, Jason Lee was kind of scared of her, actually, I believe, like, when he first worked with her, because she had, like, this, you know, this notoriety about her of being kind of difficult on set. And so, but Kevin Smith has said he loved her, like, absolutely loved her. He had such a fun time talking with her and everything. And so, and, like, you know, having her on set. And he didn't see any of that, you know, diva-ness, you know. I mean, if being a diva is getting your, you know, getting your wardrobe, you know, like, that you get to keep after or whatever, that's just something, like, you know, agreed upon by, it's a star thing, you know, or whatever.
And the other thing that, it's a little bittersweet for me about it, too, because, I'm terrible at remembering names, but the girl, the actress who plays T.S.'s girlfriend.
Yes, Claire Forlani.
Claire Forlani. Opened my eyes. I was so ready to have her as the next star. She was fabulous.
She did meet Joe gorgeous. Black.
And then that was it, because she went through the whole Weinstein thing where he...
I don't know if she did or not.
That's what happened. That she was one of the ones that he tried to pressure into doing extra contractual stuff, and she wouldn't have it. And he said, well, then your career's going nowhere. And her career went nowhere.
Well, if that's the case, that sucks. Yes. I don't know. I don't know the full story on that. I do know, I did look her up, and she has been doing stuff. It's just she hasn't been a star or whatever. And I don't know if she... I mean, and I look, she's beautiful. She's very intelligent, it seems. But there are just so many stars out there,
and
period.
She was so sweet as that character.
Just Oh, yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. You can understand why T.S. is doing all of this shit in order to get back with her.
Kevin was blown away by her because she was on stage and she did her, like, American accent, and she, you know, did her part, you know, did her audition. And they're like, oh, thank you, blah, blah, blah. And she's, no, thank you. And she spoke British, you know, she spoke in an English accent to them. And they're like, whoa, she's English? Like, they always get, like, you know, they're always impressed. Or Kevin seems to always be impressed. Another funny thing I just found out, and because Arrow has that release, and it's got an extra interview with Kevin where he talks for, like, a half hour. I can literally listen to this dude talk by himself for, hours and hours.
He's one of us.
Yes, and he's always got a lot to say. But
why we got to get him on the spotlight.
Yeah. You'd ask him one question, and then that's the whole show.
There you go.
You know? But he was talking about Ben Affleck. Jim Jacks said, Affleck is coming in today, so we got to be careful about that. And he was like, Affleck, what's that? And he was like, Ben Affleck, you know, he was the guy who had the paddle in Dazed and Confused. Oh, yeah, okay. You know, he's like, yeah, Banyan. You know, he's like, oh, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know, okay, why don't you want him, cast? He was like, oh, because he's got a potty mouth. You know, that's what he would say to him. He's like, Linklater script, and he just added a bunch of fucks to it, you know, and stuff. And he was like, well, my movie's got a lot of fucks. He was like, yeah, too many already. He's gonna add more.
Perfect for the fashionable male guy.
I know, he did in the comics beginning, he was Buttman, so, like, I don't know how he, like, why he agreed. He was okay. I don't know. Maybe I wonder if he actually, like, knew that was gonna, or was, didn't know that was gonna be a thing, and then it popped up and he was like, fuck, they made me Buttman.
And it's so funny because that interaction with T.S. where he's trying to distract him so that Brody can go and talk with Renee. And he finally breaks down and says, the one thing that we all know guys like him are perfectly believing in their heads. They're like, the customer's always an asshole.
Yep, it's exactly.
Like, that was perfect. It's like that encapsulates the character perfectly.
Uh-huh. And then later he talks about screwing somebody in a very uncomfortable place.
Oh, what, in the backseat of a Buick? Backseat of Volkswagen.
Which I watched the TV cuts and they don't... I forgot what they said, but they did not say.
They said it a couple of times.
Yeah, so they cut those out, and I think they cut it out completely. Well, I mean, you know, because they can't talk about screwing somebody in an uncomfortable place on ABC, I guess, or whatever. I don't know. It was such a, that TV cut was so weird. Because they even left some of the scenes in from the extended cut. And I don't think that was supposed to happen.
Did they leave in the chocolate-covered pretzel scene?
They left out the explanation for it.
Oh, man.
But they still had the scenes where he was, like, watching him eat it and stuff. So it made absolutely no sense.
Terrible.
It makes that's no worse. Sense because, like, you see the like him going, like, oh, I can't believe he's eating the thing. But then you're, like, thinking, if you had never seen that movie before, like, why is that, like,
I love the part, and I've always wondered if this was an ad lib, where, you know, he's after having his hand down his pants, and he still has the bag of pretzels, and he, like, looks at it, and he looks at the bag, and then he's like, and he just shrugs, and he shoves his face in the bag and eats the pretzels without putting his hand in it.
Right. I think that was probably, it had to be ad libbed, or whatever, like, you know, Jason doing it, or maybe Kevin at that point was like, just do that, you know.
That's exactly what I would have done, so I always liked that scene.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't touch it now. You fucking screwed yourself over, so you gotta, how else are you gonna eat the thing, you know?
This is so funny.
It's funny, like, Michael Rooker was not somebody that they were,
I know, it's amazing. He's so good in this, and he's not, I mean, Michael Rooker has a career of playing the bad guy, but not like this.
I know, and he actually did his hair. He went bald for the character so that he wouldn't be recognizable as, you know, like Henry the Portrait of a Serial Killer or, you know, Tombstone or any of the other movies that he's done. And he, like, when Kevin saw him, he was like, Lex Luthor, you know? Like, he was just, like, in love with that. Like, oh, my God, you're great. Like, I'm happy. And he showed his butt in the movie.
Yes, he did.
Oh, my God. Like, we got to see Michael Rooker's ass in this movie. And it was just like, okay. You know, I remember first watching it going, whoa, like, what in the world is my watching? But it was at a funny point when she said, you're being a complete ass. And then we see a complete ass.
Yeah. You know? Just all kinds of fun little things. I mean, you get to see the woman with the three tits. Yeah, you get to see Stan
Lee. Three nipples or something.
Get to see Stan Lee. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful little surprises in this film. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, which I always, like, I'm always surprised because Priscilla Barnes played that role. Right. And I think, like, she wasn't expecting Priscilla Barnes to, like, agree to do that or whatever.
To show her top.
Right. Yeah, and she was a little older too. Yeah, so, like, at that
TV
time,
actress.
Yeah, she was a little older. Mm-hmm. She was probably like, fine, sure. You know, I don't know if she had done it before or not, but, you know, it was such a funny scene too. Like,
especially at the very end where she, like, gets him every time, she peels it off and eats it. I'm like, what the hell?
It was like a gummy, gummy tit or something, gummy nipple. The funniest line in that whole thing was her saying, focus. And then she was saying focus, right? And he was like, that's what I was thinking. And then she's like, or T.S. was like, you know, she said focus, you know, right? And it was just, you know, it was funny. Like, every line in this movie is hilarious.
his reaction where he's like, he wouldn't even look at it at first. He was just like, oh.
So to go back to what you were saying earlier, that this was your favorite Kevin Smith movie. It was my favorite Kevin Smith movie for a long time. Then Chasing Amy became my, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back became my new favorite. Then Chasing Amy, because at the time that I started falling in love with Chasing Amy, you know, I was at a time where I felt like those characters a little bit. Like, a lot of my friends were, you know, I think I probably mentioned this on the Film Freaks or Criterion Watch, whatever we did it for. And we did it for Film Freaks. But, like, at that time, like, a lot of my friends were, you know, moving on and kind of dating people that, you know, and leaving me, you know. So I always felt left out of things or whatever because I didn't have a significant other and other people did, you know, or whatever. And so I connected on that level with that. Never to the point of like, I'm trying to find a lesbian to fall in love with or whatever, you know, to change into, you know what I mean? Like, I never even realized how horrible that idea of that is. And in fact, like, Glad was okay with that, whatever. But Mallrats always, I came back to Mallrats, like, after chasing Amy and stuff, and I started to realize maybe I'm really not connected as well as that. I started rewatching Mallrats over and over still, and it's probably my most watched Kevin Smith movie. Mm-hmm. Because it's a movie that, like, people say there are certain movies that you can watch when you're like, you're sick, you know, and you're kind of like, you don't need to focus on anything. Like, Jackie has Liar Liar and Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm sure you have certain comedies that you watch when you're, you know, just to, like, you know, and this might be one of them, you know, where you could just put it on and you can just lay in your couch and just, you know, be, you know, dealing with everything and just kind of sleep. It just makes you feel good. It was also one of my first times ever listening to, like, commentary and hearing people talk about, you know, the movie, and hearing Kevin Smith talk about just how, you know, the making of this movie and how, you know, it was fun for him, you know. Sure. It was a good time. So it's a movie that I can hold on high.
So why did it flop?
Marketing. It's got to be marketing, because the funny thing is, when they first marketed it, they did it at San Diego Comic-Con. Of course, a movie all about comics and stuff. And Stan Lee's in it. All this stuff. They would have been like, I mean, it would do really well. It flopped because it just didn't have the, like, I mean, people just weren't aware of it. There wasn't a good, and people weren't sure, like, what it is. Is it a comic book movie? Is it a movie? Is it a whatever? Because the way that trailers did not show it off well.
It's a shame, because it was definitely geared towards the college crowd and the early 20s-something, especially listen to the soundtrack. Soundtrack had a lot of very good bands that were very hip at the time.
Weezer and, you know, stuff like that.
Right. So they definitely went for it. It's just, like I said, I don't remember there being much of a marketing campaign. And, you know, again, I was in a part of the country that was kind of Kevin Smith crazy. Because, you know, University of Delaware is what, an hour and a half from Jersey?
Right.
So 2 hours at tops. So we were in his circle.
Have you ever been to the Quick Stop?
Not yet.
We gotta go, man. Gotta go. Yeah. I've been there. I've been to the Quick Stop once. I've been to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash twice. Because the first time I went to Secret Stash, it was on the way home from Maine, when we were coming back from Maine and whatnot. So my dad was like, hey, we're going to be pulling in that area. Do you want to go? Well, and I was like,
you know, if like, we do, then I'm going to have to get a trench coat, and you're going to have to get a long blonde hair wig, and we're going to have to pose as Jay and Silent Bob, because that would be awesome.
That would be hilarious. I'm just not tall, man. It sucks. Like, if I were tall like Jay is...
We'll put you on a box.
Maybe I'll have to. I'll have to be on an Apple box.
No, we should get a Chuli's box.
There was no Chuli's reference in this. No, it was strange, because it's a sequel to Clerks in a way, but not. You know, it's called, like, the New Jersey Trilogy. If you look at Chasing Amy, they all mention the same stuff. They all tie together. You know, like, you know, Chasing Amy ties to both Clerks and Mallrats. Mallrats ties to both of those movies, too, because Trisha Jones is mentioned. And
Trish the Dish,
which he was, like, obsessed. She had done a movie called Fun that he loved. And so the first thing he said to her was... oh my God, Fun! And she's like, I guess I am. You know, like, and Janine's like, no, you were in the movie Fun. And she was like, oh yeah. I was like, I love that movie. So, like, I guess the first time he saw her, Renee Humphreys, he was like, she's, you know, she's Trish. Like, and if you think about it, that movie, like, you couldn't talk about that necessarily today. Mm-mm. Because that was a very taboo, like, thing of her being, like 16 and getting consent. Mm-hmm. You can't get consent at 16 or 15 or whatever she is. Not even New Jersey. So technically what she did was illegal. Mm-hmm. And the proprietor of Fashionable Male got arrested at the end of the movie for, and you know.
It's not just him. I mean, she had a whole range of men that she was sleeping with for her research, quote unquote. So
all those men.
All those men, right.
But I don't know, like. I mean, I'm wondering if that was just a joke on that, you know, specific thing, or if that was something like, how does Kevin Smith come up with a character like that? Like, there must have been something that he had seen in the news or something that he dealt with.
Yeah, there's a little bit of male fantasy stuff that he kind of touches on in some of these things that I think you pick up in Clerks. I think definitely Chasing Amy with the turning the lesbian back into, you know, heterosexual. There's some stuff there that are kind of typical male fantasy things.
Wouldn't it have happened if she were just a regular, like, just a flat-out lesbian? Like, if she had never,
poly,
you know.
I mean, that's the thing now, is to be poly or you know, whatever the new terms are about.
Well, what I'm saying bisexual, is, like, yeah, bisexual or, not poly.
Pansexual
or something. Right. Like that. Nowadays, like, if they did Chasing Amy, it would be a little bit different on that kind of thing. But she, that's the thing, bisexual, that's what she was. She explored in her youth and right. She wasn't necessarily just.
Chasing Amy came out at a time when the LGBT community was really, really picking up steam and was really beginning to assert itself. But what a lot of people don't understand is that bisexual people are still sort of on the outs, even in the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community, because there's this perception that they're there simply to have sex, or they can't make up their minds, or something.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a group of people who are discriminated against, who are then discriminated against a smaller group of people within their own group. So it just wasn't as accepted back then. It's a different situation now. Nobody talked about being pan or polysexual back even during the Chasing Amy period. Now.
Right.
But now it's like a big thing, and things have changed. Society has changed. Sexual mores have changed. And you could be a lot more open about that sort of thing. Where even in the early 90s, people were a little bit more reluctant to bring things like that up.
You're right. Because I was in a... I was working at a place in the early 2000s. And this... guy that I worked with, was a gay guy. You know, very, very flamboyantly gay. Came up to me and he was like talking to me about how, you know, he said something and then I said, well, what if they're bisexual? And he goes, you know, oh, I don't get bisexuals. Pick a hole. And he walked away and I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, gay guys don't like bisexuals much.
Yeah, like, no, it's a shame, really. And, you know, I don't think that there's as much friction as it was back then. But, you know, since I'm not really in that you know, framework, I don't know the inside story. I just know from talking with other friends and seeing how culturally it was handled.
To tie this back to Mallrats, so the movie was originally supposed to have a Hooper, who later was, you know, Chasing Amy character, was the Hooper X guy or whatever. It was going to be T.S. Quint, Brody Bruce, mm-hmm. which I have to think that because he named him Bruce, was he named shark. After the shark?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. So Brody, which is Chief Brody and Bruce, and T.S. Quint, which was T.S. Eliot and Quint, you know, or whatever it was. And I don't know if Eliot was his middle name. That would have been interesting. T.S. Eliot Quint or whatever. But T.S. Quint, Brody Bruce, and then there was going to be a Hooper. And they're all going to go over their scars from their sexual exploits. That was in the original script. Hmm. And then they cut that out, and they cut out the Hooper character. And then he put that scene in Chasing Amy when they're in the, you know, right. They're all going over their scars from sexual exploits and stuff. And it felt more like a scene that I don't know if that would have been like taking over the scene where they're talking about, you know, it's impossible. Lois can't have, you know, Superman's baby. That scene, I mean, fucking phenomenal scene, by the way. That I think that's one of my favorite scenes, and it's the scene that, like, I always, you know, because it's a scene that got him Superman Returns, mm-hmm. because people are like, he knows about Superman. Let's see if he'll come in and pitch for us, you know?
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is right around this time, nerds were starting to come back, and well, not come back, but starting to be more of an accepted subgenre in the community as well. So, and that movie's got all kinds of pro-nerd stuff going on with comic books and superheroes and...
Stan Lee,
and video games and all that kind of stuff.
But Stan Lee did not want... this is an interesting thing. Did not was originally afraid for the the line about like the girl that got away. He was afraid about that because he was like, if I say stuff about the girl that got away, the girl I got at home will leave me. You know, right? And so he really cared about his wife. He didn't want her feeling bad and everything.
It's just lines from a movie.
Right. So he said, can we just change it to like, I was just pulling, you know, I was just making up a story, you know, or whatever, right? Because he is playing himself. So people might, like, even though it's just a silly movie and whatever, and people shouldn't take it seriously, maybe somebody will, you know, make a big, especially these days. You know how many articles get written about when somebody plays themselves in a movie and they're like, you know, Seth Rogen is like, you know, blah, 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 because he was, you know, he played himself in this movie. He must be like this, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just it. You have to have a thick skin in this business.
Well, anyway, so he asked him if he could just switch, have an extra scene where he explains that thing or whatever. And Kevin was like, yeah, sure. So he wrote that like, oh, I just gave him the Vulture soliloquy from, you know, Spider-Man issue, whatever. However, it's really funny. Years later, Stan Lee talked to Kevin and was like, did you notice I got more screen time because I had you add that extra scene and everything? And he was like, genius! Wow, that's brilliant.
He's like, oh, I'm worried about your friend. He seems obsessed with superhero sex organs.
It was a great line, wouldn't have been in the scene had he not added it. So
really good.
Thank you, Stan Lee, for doing that, and thank your wife for being happy and all that stuff. We just love you. We miss you, Stan. It's sad that he's no longer with it. However, they were telling him that he's 70 years old. Be careful. You know, you could go at any time, right? And he lasted 25 more years, you know. So
well, there was a lot of pro-nerd stuff in that. And, of course, Kevin Smith follows that up, you know, in Chasing Amy. That's comic books. And, you know, I loved in Clerks 2 where it's got, you know, Lord of the Rings versus Star Wars. And just all these wonderful nerd tropes that, because, you know, Kevin Smith is like us. He loves the nerd stuff. I mean, you know.
He's created podcasts just like us. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started, I think, a little bit before he did on my podcast. But he, like, I feel like Kevin Smith really helped bring podcasts out and made it.
Would be willing to bet, even if he hasn't come out and admitted it, but I'm willing to bet he's probably also played Dungeons & Dragons.
I've never heard him say that, but like maybe he talks more about the Star Wars stuff and, mm-hmm. and everything and his love for like Lord of I don't think Lord of the Rings.
Trust me, all of that stuff is a gateway drug into fantasy role playing games, and I'm sure he's made that step.
At some point, maybe he's played something like that.
He's of my age, and I remember when all that stuff became a big thing.
Yep. So there you go. Maybe. I don't know. I have never... I mean,
and it's funny because there are a lot of Hollywood people now who are kind of out and open about it. And they have a lot of podcasts where you have like The Rock and other people who are
Will Wheaton and people like that.
So it wouldn't surprise me if someday we see Kevin Smith as like a guest or involved somehow.
I think he has been. Like, I feel like he has done stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, it's weird because, you know so much about people, but some things they keep privately, probably for the better, because they just want to just keep their private life, you know, private, you know what I mean? And wonderful. Like, I love that. But it gets to a point where you're just like, you know, it'd be interesting to find out more information like this. Like, if we did interview him, that's the kind of questions you'd ask is like, were you ever into role-playing, you know, or whatever. And not in the bedroom.
Right, yeah. You know. It's funny. There was a role-playing game. It was a small one. It was like a limited version. I forget the name of it because I can't remember anything anymore. But the idea was that you created these weird made-up monster creature characters, and it was set in this alternate Earth thing where the future was pretty much, you know, America was a wasteland. There wasn't anything there. But it was set in the Mall of America, and you're running around the mall. And all I kept thinking the entire time when I was playing was Mallrats. It was so perfect. Oh, my God. It was a lot of fun.
Maybe he's played that, because that is something that, like, somebody would probably bring to him and be like, hey, you should play this.
I always thought Mallrats would be a great board game or card game. That would be a lot of fun.
You know, if they do Mallrats 2 at some point, which if they do it, they wouldn't do the original. The original part 2 that was going to be made was Mallrats 2, Die Hard in a Mall. And I'm like, and that was only because at that time, Die Hard was like everything. Die Hard in this, Die Hard in that, you know, or whatever. It was just a joke. It was just going to be like, all of a sudden, terrorists have taken over the mall, and I guess Brody Bruce has to save it. The closest thing we've ever gotten so far to, like, Mallrats sequels are Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, where we see the mall, or we see the comic book store, or whatever that Brody like owns or whatever, and stuff.
But that would be perfect if they were to, like, set up a board game kind of like Monopoly, except instead of going around the Monopoly board, you're going around the mall and you're going to all the different places. That would be fabulous.
Get on it, Parker Brothers, man. There needs to be a Mallrats Monopoly game.
Yes, yes.
There's a Harry Potter Monopoly game. Exactly. So why not?
If we can have Harry Potter, for God's sakes, we can have Mallrats.
Right. You know, I agree.
Whatever. Yeah, we could populate with all the Kevin Smith characters from all his films. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
A little Tusk corner.
No. I think that's one of the ones that won't get, you know. Sadly. And we've talked about this.
That won't, but Jiggly will?
What? No, Jiggly won't get anything, but that's not... You know, that's not Kevin Smith anyway. Kevin Smith had nothing to do with that other than the fact that he knew, Jersey Girl is more what you're probably talking about. Yeah. But I actually really like Jersey Girl. I think it's a sweet, sweet story. And it was made for his kid, you know. Like, I think it was just a perfect, like, thing, you know, for him at that time. But, you know, he was dealing, once again, it was a part of his life that he was, you know, dealing with. Like, A, he got so famous from, like, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, did pretty well in the box office. You know, he needed to do something new. He wanted to do something Chasing Amy-like, you know. And he chose Jersey Girl. So, you know, I liked it.
I've always wondered, do you think Tusk is another one that you could lump in as far as being a Hollywood knockbuster? Because I don't know that necessarily, you know, was very successful.
It wasn't a Hollywood, though. I don't even think a big Hollywood company put it out, you know, or anything. I think that was independently made. That was not produced by a studio. That was him going out and making the movie on his own. I think if we did it for anything, it'll be a What the Fuck Friday. And I think that's what maybe sometime this season we'll have for What the Fuck Friday.
Because I think, and I don't know whether he's discussed this, but I think he's had some difficulty with the more mainstream type films, and what's one of the reasons why I think he keeps going back to his roots and doing more Clerks movies, more Jane, Silent Bob movies, etc.
Well, I mean, look at Mallrats to begin with. Like, Mallrats was his first attempt at a Universal style thing. It's still very cheap. Like, I think it was, I mean, don't quote me on this, but I think it was like $5 million. Or whatever, you know, which is pretty cheap for Hollywood standards. Even back then, it was pretty cheap for that stuff. But it was a flop. It didn't do very well. It did terrible in the box office. Then so he went back to Chasing Amy. Then Chasing Amy did well enough where he did Dogma, and Dogma was like only a step above that. It looked better because they had a better cinematographer and all this other stuff. And then he went on to do Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and that was a huge movie. So then he tried to do Jersey Girl, and that didn't do well as he was hoping. A lot of that had to do with the Bennifer situation, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that Ben Affleck is a great actor. Love him, but there's just certain roles, you know, whatever, that he's just better at, you know. So then later they did, what is it? And I bet now, I guarantee you, if they had done Jersey Girl now, that movie would have been a little bit more successful. Because Ben Affleck, I think, has grown completely, even more as an actor. I've seen him on some stuff recently that I'm like, holy shit. The Way Back, fucking phenomenal. He's so good. But anyway, so then he did Clerks 2 to go back, and you know, he didn't want to, whatever. And then he did Zach and Mary Make a Porno, and that did okay. That did well enough.
I like that one, too.
That was cute. Had some great moments to it. But then he did Cop Out. And that was literally a cop out. Like, that was him just trying to be a director and doing something. And it didn't do well. And, you know, and that's sad because it's not terrible. You know, it's fun, it's goofy, it's silly. It's Bruce Willis being John McClane in a comedy, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't mind it. It's just it would have been better had he wrote it. You know. He did come up with the title though. Because Kevin Smith did. Because the original title was A Couple of Dicks. And then they were like, oh, we can't have that. Right? As the title. So they're like, how about A Couple of Cops? Right? And he goes, isn't that a cop out? As a joke? And they're like, cop out! That's the title. And they're like, okay. You know? Like, it didn't even work for the movie itself. It's just, oh yeah, it's about a cop. You know? Like,
A Couple of Dicks would have been more fun.
A Couple of Dicks would have been a better title. I bet you would have liked that. But unfortunately, sadly, a Hollywood can't have dicks in the title, I guess.
Hollywood sucks.
I know. But if it were an indie film, A Couple of Dicks would have probably been what it would have been called as an indie film.
Here's the question, though. Would they have gotten, without that money, they probably wouldn't have gotten Bruce Willis.
Nowadays, they would.
Yeah.
Because he's doing nothing but, like, straight-to-video indie stuff, you know. Jared Cohn just released one. Recently, with that Bruce Willis starred in, a lot of my friends actually acted in that, so I'm like, I want to see it so badly. We just saw that other one that James Cullen Bresick, we didn't watch it, but like you saw that, bought that, that James Cullen Bresick directed. I mean, there's people out there making, you know, just think about it. The guy that was in Blood Predator is directing Bruce Willis now.
I know, it's just
like,
funny.
It's just like such a strange,
Kevin,
you know.
Smith, Quentin Tarantino, Jared Cohn.
Yeah. You're right. And you think, you know, yeah. Or actually, Tarantino. I guess Tarantino would go first, though, you know, of all things. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's just sort of like, it's really funny that this movie is just became what it is. Like, people love it now, Mallrats now.
Sure.
But like back then.
Well, I said it's had a rebound.
It had a rebound. And it got an Arrow release with like, two discs, and you know, and it's got so much like stuff going for it.
And I need to get, that's a Blu-ray.
It's a Blu-ray, yeah.
I need to pick that up.
Next, I don't know when they're having their next half off sale, but if Barnes and Noble's has, I'll let you know, and you can, I would tell you to go pick it up because it was at my local Barnes and Noble, which means it's most likely at almost every Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, I saw the last one that came on, and I ended up buying Society, so.
Oh, did you? Wait, okay. So you bought it at Barnes & Noble.
Oh,
then.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the Arrow half-off thing.
Yeah. Okay. I think, did I tell you about it, or did you find it out yourself about that?
You told me about the sale.
Okay, good. Because
yeah.
I always loved letting you know about that shit because, you know, I mean, any time that we can get a half off these things, we'll take it because they are worth the $40.
And dude, I've been looking for a copy, much less, not to say just a regular copy, not to say a Blu-ray copy of Society. Forever. So
right.
This was perfect.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you, Paul, for coming on and joining us with season finale. It's the second season finale of the show. And I just really appreciate you being on here. Everybody else will join us next month. I think we'll be like, I think I'm going to do one more, not next month, next year, next season. I'll be doing one more season. And then I'm going to take a little bit of a break for like a year or so, so that, you know, because we got a million things going on right now. I keep saying that. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I'm like, this is what I'm planning right now. But yeah, we'll be back in March for the next season. And I've got a good one that I can't wait to start it off with. And one that not a lot of people talk about. And it's by one of your favorite directors, too. So maybe I'll have you back on for it.
Have you done Showgirls yet?
No. I don't know if I will or not. I don't know. We'll talk about that, but I don't know. Anywho, I really appreciate everybody coming and listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. And if you're a big Kevin Smith fan, give us a like, you know, because we all appreciate Kevin. So Kevin out there, if you're listening to this, which you're probably not, we appreciate you. We're very happy you're out there.
And come on our show.
Come on our show so we can ask you some hard-hitting questions that you might... You probably know the answers to all of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So thank you so much. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And join us next season.
Bye.
Bye.